This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You can read them at Sports Illustrated. You can see them on the streets of Brooklyn if you're just looking for, like, you know, a little sighting, a little NBA media celebrity sighting. Follow him on Twitter at Howard Beck. He is Howard Beck. Hello, Mr. Beck. What's up?
Good morning, Mr. Ryder. Nice to speak with you again. It was more preferable over drinks in person, but I'll settle for a phone call.
I did like your new corner of Brooklyn. It was pretty cool, dude. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Nice spot, right? You should come back.
I'm going to. It would have been a little easier had the Brooklyn Nets gotten it done. But I think I'm going to be back for a couple weeks since the TV thingy is based there. And I want to ask you about Brooklyn. Maybe I'm just getting soft in my old age, Howard. I actually thought it was a remarkable performance by Kevin Durant. No judgment on my end. The guy ran out of steam. I mean, he played so many minutes and didn't have a lot of help. And I thought it was a pretty impressive season for Brooklyn, given the injuries. How do you assess the Nets this year?
You know, obviously anything short of the championship was going to be considered a disappointment. But, I mean, you know, the details matter. It matters that James Harden was, you know, 35-40% of himself maybe on that hamstring. It matters that Kyrie Irving wasn't playing in the end. And so, this is not one of those cases where I think everybody in the wake of it is going to go, oh, my God, it didn't work. You got to blow it up, or you got to start over. Somebody needs to be fired, or you got to overhaul the roster. Like, this is not one of those cases. This is a very simple, straightforward. They built a super team on the fly. I think it exceeded expectations in some regard, considering the context. I mean, they got James Harden in mid-January, had to unload half their roster to get him, had no depth at that moment, rebuilt it piece by piece over the course of the season, dealt with, you know, any combination of their stars being out, and then made a pretty great run and all the way to, you know, game 7 of the conference finals overtime. And you know, they stretched it as far as they could given the lack of health. And if even, you know, one thing doesn't happen, if Harden is just fully healthy, they probably win that series. And so, you know, but that all said, okay, you didn't make it. You do have to assess now where you are, because they've got some key free agents, and you can't just assume a full season of good health and we'll win it all next year. Obviously, there's still some things they got to consider.
Howard Beck here on the show. Howard, I want to get into Philly and the debacle that occurred there, because I like to lean into those things. But real quick on Milwaukee, they advance. They get all the credit in the world for that. There were certainly some stretches where guys didn't play well, where Chris Middleton didn't play well, where Drew Holiday didn't play well. Do you see Milwaukee as a sure thing finals team? Do you think they just roll through Atlanta, or did you see anything that makes you think maybe the Hawks could sneak up on them as well?
I think, and I could come to regret saying this, that everything we've seen so far from Milwaukee, combined with everything we've seen so far from Atlanta, should indicate that this series is going to be very competitive, could go the distance. Atlanta is not a typical fifth seed. And by the way, we're only a year removed from a fifth seed making the finals in the East. So, you know, nothing should be impossible anymore. The Hawks were not in the playoffs for several years before this. And nobody, normally you do not go from years and years out of the playoffs to the NBA finals. But the Suns are in position to do that after a decade. And the Hawks are in position to do that. And, you know, it's a different kind of year. And the Hawks are more talented than their record and their fifth place standing suggested. They had a strange season. They had a bunch of injuries. They had a coaching change. But the talent was always there. We could see it coming, but it was young talent. And we thought, well, they need some seasoning. They need some time. They need to go through some things. Well, that you know, development arc has kind of accelerated. And you don't see it happen very often. Normally, you make the first round, lose. Go make the second round, lose, whatever. They are on an accelerated path right now. And the Bucks have just enough, you know, concerns, caveats, frailties, that I think it's fair to say that the Hawks can push them to the distance, because the Hawks have proven to be tough. They're not intimidated by the spotlight or by talent across the court from them. They're legit. I think it's going to be a great series.
Howard back here on the show. And by the way, Howard, I don't know if you saw this. You probably did. If that series goes seven, it changes the final schedule, making life for all of us even more fun than it normally is. Are you going to the finals? Have you committed one way or the other?
I do not know that as of right now. We are waiting to see what access rules will be like. You know, as of right now, if your listeners aren't aware, all media interviews are still, for the most part, Zoom interviews. There is some in-person press conference access being allowed now, but it's still in a structured press conference. There's very, very limited opportunity to talk to somebody face to face because of COVID rules. So the NBA is being very conservative in the way that they are trying to restore pieces of normalcy, but we're not back to normal. So normally the benefit of us being at these things is not just being at the game. It's the access and getting to talk to people, especially trying to get people off to the side so that you have unique information. And for reporters right now, as it has been for the last, 14, 15 months, we don't really have that. And so it decreases the urgency of being places.
I'm going to clip this and send this to my bosses at CBS. And I don't think they'll mind me saying on national radio. And if they do, they're not listening. So I'm in pretty good shape. I'm with you. There's not a lot of value in going to this thing, I think, for those of us that cover it. Howard, I have been historically pretty hard on Doc. Hard's the wrong word. I've just been highly skeptical of Doc Rivers' teams and have been pretty comfortable in these silly predictions we're required to do as part of our various jobs at saying that his teams are not going to advance very far, including this particular season. Is that an unfair oversimplification of Doc Rivers the last few years, including obviously this past series? Or is something going on with that correlates to Doc Rivers as it relates to this lack of success in the postseason of late?
These things are always more complicated than they appear on the surface. And I know a lot of graphics were circulating the other day on social media and elsewhere about Doc's, postseason record and collapses and this and that. It's all fair. This is sports. It's all fair. It's fair to discuss. It's fair to debate. It's fair to a fair line of criticism on some level. But, it's always more complicated because if you drill down into what happened in each of these series and where were the injuries and where were the strange turns of events and whatever, and how much of this is on the coach, it gets a lot more messy. No, nobody really wants to do that because it takes too much time, and I'm not going to do it right now. But I will just say this. If we learned anything about the Sixers in this past couple of weeks, it's not that Doc Rivers doesn't know how to coach. It's that Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are as flawed of a pairing as many of us thought from the beginning, and that Ben Simmons as a star has some fatal flaws that he has refused to address. And that's more the issue. Look, we know how it goes in this league. Talent generally wins, and you need multiple high-level players. Embiid was playing on a torn meniscus, and Ben Simmons doesn't want to shoot. And, the passing up of the dunk to pass the tie ball, Embiid flagged it. Everybody's noted it. Everybody's talked about it ad nauseum. That is it in a nutshell. And so if your second best player won't shoot in fourth quarters, is a non-factor offensively except as a passer, in today's NBA, in the three-point happy era where everybody shoots it and shoots it at volume, and your ball handler is the most important one to shoot it, because that's how you keep defenses honest and keep the offense moving and keep your teammates open. If you don't shoot it, if you're not a threat, clogs everything up, and it can just gag your offense, which is what was happening. It was suffocating them. And so we can talk about Doc Rivers, fine, but and his record, fine, but the Sixers have some fatal flaws. They don't have a go-to guy down the stretch of games, except for Embiid, who can't do it himself. He's got to get the ball from somebody else. And they should have kept Jimmy Butler.
Well, I mean, that is what it is. No, I mean, that's what like, they paid. I mean, look, there's a whole Elton Brand conversation, too, that I think we could, right, if you really wanted to dive into it. Let me ask you this. Actually, let me lean into the ad nauseum of Ben Simmons, because I wanted to ask you this, and it, you know, it's maybe it's mean-spirited, but I'm curious. You have covered, how long have you covered the NBA?
24 years.
Okay. In your time covering the NBA and Summer League and whatever college hoops you've watched, whatever pickup games you watched, I'm being serious. Have you ever watched in a competitive game someone pass up a dunk, an open dunk?
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I'll never forget, I think it was in an All-Star game maybe, Andre Miller got booed because he laid it up instead of dunking it. I do remember that, but yeah. That's just because he's Andre Miller. But he still scored, yes.
Right.
And we have had moments in the last several years where things have gone viral, where it's somebody, because we're in this three-point era and it's emphasized so much, a guy gets into space. And you think, well, he could just go in for it, but then he breaks down the defense and then he passes it out for a three. Like, that happens a lot now, right? And so there have been some other moments where I think people have gone like, oh, analytics is out of control. Look, he could have gone for the layup, but he passed out for the three. But nothing like this. This is, you know, a crucial game seven, 3 minutes to go, tight game, and he could have gone straight up. And he's a 6'10 dude. It's not like some, like, 6 foot guy who's like, well, I don't know if I can get through traffic or get through, you know, physical defense. Like, he's 6'10. He barely has to jump to dunk. So that was bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. Considering everything, the context of it, who he is, everything that happened. It's stunning.
Is Ben Timmons too on the nose as a nickname?
Oh man, that's rough.
Yeah, I like it. I just came up with it. I feel good about it.
Yeah.
You're lukewarm, like my dog tag. Howard Beck here on the show. Do you have any sense, because I don't, to the degree to which there could be significant change in Philly, given the fact that Daryl Morey did not hire Elton Brand and he did not hire Doc Rivers. Daryl Morey got brought in as the big honcho of basketball operations after, I mean, Elton's been there for a while, and obviously this is his first year. But none of those were Daryl Morey decisions. Do you think beyond a Simmons potential trade, there could be other major changes in Philadelphia this offseason?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, look, Daryl just got there. And yes, often, you know, you take over a new team. You want to put your own people in place. You evaluate the folks you inherited and you decide who stays, who goes. It's all possible. I don't, you know. They need to figure out what that roster is, what their identity is going forward. I mean, they're a team that's going to be built around and identified by Joel Embiid. Like, that's clear. Who the best players around Joel Embiid? Like, that's the mission now. You take over a team as Daryl Morey. You take over a roster that has Joel Embiid on it, a guy who was runner up for MVP and might have actually won it if he hadn't missed so many games. The mission is build the best possible team around Joel Embiid. And in year one, Daryl did a pretty good job of bringing in a couple more shooters, getting Danny Green. By the way, again, another guy, significant player who didn't play. That changes the series on some level.
Absolutely.
Danny Green and Seth Curry. Those were good moves. He's now got more time and runway to do more. And this time it's probably Ben Simmons. And he did try to trade Ben Simmons for James Harden already. So we know he's willing. That's going to be the big thing. Now, if there's an internal clash over that, then maybe that creates the tension that kind of leads to other changes. But I don't think so. I mean, Doc just got there. Elton Brand is a good dude, smart guy, been there for a while, and he's a great, on a number of levels very tightly, I think, identified with that franchise for his time there as a player and everything else. I don't think there's any need for that to happen. Also, like, you know, back to the Ben Simmons thing. Well, you know, Ben Simmons was the product of Sam Hinkie's tanking, and he was technically Brian Colangelo's pick. So it's not like somebody there is going to be like married to that, and that's going to be the thing that causes them to reshuffle the front office or something. So no, I don't see any major changes happening other than if they can pull it off, a Ben Simmons deal.
Howard, back here on the show. Howard, even with Chris Paul still out, to sort of my perspective, it just feels like the Phoenix Suns are going to win this series, right? Unless Kawhi surprises us all and comes back. Am I making the classic mistake of forgetting about the superstar power of Terrence Mann and or missing something else here? Do you see the Clippers as being competitive in this series?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the question has been, like, who comes back first, Chris Paul or Kawhi Leonard? And it's like, well, I think it's obvious. Like, Chris Paul is in protocols, but by all indications, it doesn't sound like he's got COVID, so he's going to get cleared sooner than later. And Kawhi Leonard's got a sprained ACL that might be a torn ACL. And the longer we go without any new information on that, the more it seems like, well, it's probably serious. So the Clippers as a Paul George-centered team, I think a week ago we would have all said they got no shot. But then Paul George has been playing phenomenally to get them here. And Terrence Mann has you know, had some amazing moments. Reggie Jackson. Like, there's a semblance of a supporting cast there. And it's not like the Suns are stacked, right? Like, they're really, really good. Like, Devin Booker is an all-star and a guy who flirts with all NBA selections every, you know, for the last couple of years. He's going to break through eventually. And Chris Paul's a Hall of Famer, but, you know, in the latter part of his career, and he's got to get back on the court. Ayton is a really good player. Bridges is a really good player. Like, there's a bunch of really good. There's not supreme talent. This is not – so, like, it becomes a toss-up, I think. And if Chris Paul gets back before Kawhi Leonard, and I think that's probably the case, then it definitely tips in the Suns' favor. But I'm not ruling out the Clippers. They keep, you know, overcoming everything thrown at them and everybody's low expectations for them. So, you know, who's to say that they couldn't pull it off again?
All right, Howard Beck, last one for you. I want to circle back to Atlanta because I've been on this Atlanta train for a while. It sounds like you think the Hawks can win an NBA championship. If you think they can push Milwaukee, it means you think they can make the finals. I agree with you. Do you think Atlanta can be NBA champions?
A few weeks ago, I wrote a column heading into the playoffs about how, like, all this weirdness of the year means everything is in play. Like, there's nothing is certain, all this blah, blah, blah. And I think I even had a throwaway line, like, are you ready for Suns-Hawks in the finals? And we're almost there. It's crazy. I'm not predicting the Hawks are going to beat the Bucks, and I think probably the Bucks win. But I'm not saying that it's a certainty, as we talked about at the opening. If the Hawks make it, at that point, like, you have to say, like, yes, they're capable of winning it. So sure, why not? I don't mean that too flippantly. I think everything is on the table right now. I don't think any of these four teams is a lock to do anything. Partially because it's just not that kind of year, and partially because all these teams have their flaws. This is not a year of a super team that feels like, you know, the British manifest destiny. Like, nothing is certain with this group of teams, and that's fine. That's actually good. Suspense is good.
I love how amused you sound. You sound like, is that basically as close as you get to a hot take? Was that line in your column?
And that was a throwaway line. That was just like to mess with people. I mean, listen, we had, you know, four straight years where we were almost 99.9% certain it was going to be Warriors Cavs, right? And those were great finals. And watching any LeBron James team versus any Steph Curry team was always going to be great theater and great basketball. So that's fine. But we always had this feeling of inevitability. And, you know, the Heat for the 4 years that LeBron was there, the feeling of inevitability. There were years with Shaq and Kobe. I didn't always think I was covering those teams. I didn't always think they were inevitable. But some people felt like that was the case. And during the Bulls years with Jordan. So, like, having a year where there is no inevitability, the Nets felt like an inevitability, and they went down because of injuries. The Lakers, even with all their injuries, people were still like, LeBron and Anthony Davis are going to be there in the end. Well, they're not. They went out in the first round. This is great. Yes, I'm chuckling over it because, like, the lack of inevitability, the lack of a super team is good for the NBA. It's good for the viewers. And I know people are going to be like, what happens if these small markets are in the final? Like, give me a break. Like, you're still going to have great players in the finals, great teams in the finals, and you're going to have hit the refresh button. It's not going to be the same old storylines or the same players, and it's not super teams. That's ultimately, to me, good for the health of the league, good for belief in other markets where you can say, you know what, maybe we don't get LeBron and Anthony Davis, but Giannis and a collection of really good players is enough. Or building a completely organically through the draft over several years with the Hawks, and getting Trey Young and Kevin Herter and John Collins trading for Clint Capela, like that's going to be enough. We don't have to have a super team. Like that's good. If we have an outcome like that, and same for the Suns, by the way, that's good. If the Clippers win, it will still feel like the same old kind of like, even though they're the Clippers, they're LA, they're a big market, glamour market super team. But if they somehow did it without Kawhi Leonard, like that puts it in a different light too.
Howard Beck, I love that hot take. Lean into it. We're going to give you one of these right now on the way out.
It's a lukewarm take. It is lukewarm at best.
I love that. I love that drop. Howard Beck, you're a good man. I will be in New York City for a couple weeks of the finals doing some of the games from our offices in Sanford. So, you know, maybe a little drink on me again, buddy.
Come on back to Carroll Gardens. We'll go back to Abilene.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.